Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to another night of Full Spectrum Radio. I am Matt, and with me, as always, is Dennis. What's going on, man?
Good evening, Full Spectrum Radio! Same old, same old, brother. I just had to throw a little bit of shout-out and give my regards and my sympathies to Robin Williams' family. That was probably one of my favorite shows. I know everybody's talking about him. Everybody's doing a show to him. But he was truly one of a kind. So that's my little shout out to him. By the way, I'm doing good. It's been an awesome week. I sat in Monday night in place of Ryan, who did a Sunday night overnight investigation, which they've got some pretty heavy EVPs going on in that place. Now, I stepped in there on Saturday and checked it out with them on an emergency because they had, and I will quote, a ceramic flower artsy-fartsy piece. The artsy-fartsy piece isn't a quote. That's mine. But it was thrown right in front of a client in an antique store. So it's definitely a hot place. But, yeah, I went in Saturday night. We spent a few hours. It was a good time. So, all right, let's see. Well, I had to tell you how my week was going. Now, in other news, aside from Robin Williams passing, we had Lauren Bacall, who passed away also. Another fantastic screen icon, fantastic personalities. It's a shame that we've lost both of them. But here's my problem. You ready for me to get serious?
I am, sir.
Okay. Here's my problem. These are both people that are in the public eye. Everybody knew about that. What about John Doe down the street? Or Jane Doe around the corner, or somebody that you went to school with, or somebody that you work with whose mother or brother or aunt or uncle, they passed away. So I think instead of all of the rest in pieces to Robin Williams, Lauren Bacall, how about this? Rest in peace, anybody this week that has passed away. Our thoughts, condolences, and prayers to your family. How's that?
I will be behind that. I think, all right, just the way that I heard that and the wording behind it, what we're saying is not exclusive to them, but in addition to them. So
yeah, it's just to everybody that has lost somebody this week.
Yeah.
Not just this week. Not just this week. And not just to suicide. Just anybody that has lost somebody. Our thoughts, condolences, and prayers go out to you for having lost somebody close to you. You know, I've mentioned it a dozen times on air here. You know, when I was 16, my brother was found at the end of a rope from a tree. My mother passed away from cancer. My father passed away because some 17-year-old kid couldn't keep his car on the right side of the road. There was a news report here in Richmond yesterday. We had some really heavy rains around the area. There was an accident up on a little four-lane highway, non-divided. It's a 55 zone. Two cars went head-to-head, and another one packed one in the ass as it came to an abrupt halt from impact forward. Two small children and the father were all three thrown from the vehicle. Here's my question. I've never seen a seatbelt throw you from a vehicle. It's safe to assume none of these individuals were wearing a seatbelt. To those two children that are still in the hospital in serious to critical condition, who lost their father in that accident, my thoughts, prayers, and condolences to you. Wear a seatbelt, folks. Pay attention. Don't be texting and driving. I had one today that tried to take off the side of my truck in a work van right beside me. I'm looking out my passenger window at him as he's texting at 75 mile an hour. Look, jackass, I know my insurance is in place. I don't want to use it. Leave me alone. Pay attention. Look forward. And I know he was looking at his phone because nobody looks at their crotch and smiles randomly.
Well, I'm sure there's some people out there.
I mean, I do. I look at it and go, it's almost a penis. One of these days. Oh, look, it's a penis starter kit.
And as we're starting out the show going south,
but,
man.
Yeah, I mean, just pay attention, folks. It's been a really rough week. And, you know, I'm looking at all the forest fires and everything out west, and I'm going, oh, shit, we got plenty of rain. Can we bucket this shit to them? Oh, it's just crazy. Crazy. Been that kind of week, man. My mind is all over the place. If you have been like me this week and your mind is just all over the place, well, I think it's because of the cycle of the moon. I was kind of pissed last night, I'm not going to lie. The Perseid meteor shower was supposed to be at its kind of peak along with the last portions of the major moon. You know, the super moon and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was kind of pissed. Now, we managed to get cloudy skies. However, about the time I'm ready for bed, it was probably 12:15, I walk into the bedroom, I'm like, holy crap, it's bright out. I thought they said it was going to be really cloudy and I wouldn't be able to see the moon. So I turn around, I go back down the hallway, go out the back door, and yeah, it must have been that one little tiny spot that the damn clouds didn't cover the moon. And guess what I didn't see in that one little tiny spot of clouds that didn't cover the moon? A meteor either. Damn it. So I think they were bullshitting. I don't think there was actually a meteor shower last night.
Yeah, I was watching. They were talking about the meteor showers. We had overcast clouds here. I couldn't see anything. I was looking out there, trying to find a gap or if there was some place that I could drive a little bit closer and see it, but all the gaps in the clouds were over kind of like major cities where the ambient light just kills everything.
Yeah, it was, you know, I am one of the fortunate ones that, you know, I live close to a large town, you know, or a large city being Richmond. But we still get a decent amount of ambient light out here. And it's not enough that, I mean, normally if we have a meteor shower, I'm able to watch it. And I absolutely love it. I just think it's awesome to sit back and watch them. And that's going to be one of the questions that I have for our guest tonight, who, by the way, is running a little bit late. Notified us that he will be calling in just a little while. But one of the things that I want to ask him is, you know, things like the supermoon or, do Earth cycles seem to have any correlation to how sharks behave? You know, as the son of a thin blue line, you know, law enforcement officer, and having several friends on the police department, they always anticipate during a full moon people just going to lose their minds. I'm wondering if sharks are affected by that also. And that's something that I need to throw up to him and see what he comes up with.
Well, there has to be, and that's actually a really, really good question. And thinking about that in retrospect, when we were setting up the show and I was, you know, talking to people via Messenger and on the phone about sharks, about, you know, just behavior of animals and creatures in the sea, if the moon affects the tides as much as it does at a standard distance, if you will, how much more does it affect the sea life and the tides, temperatures? When you get the supermoon, when it's at one of its closest points, how much more draw does that have? How much more does that affect the ecosystem of the ocean?
Yeah, I mean, if it affects the tides, does it affect feeding habits, mood? You know, supposedly it affects humans' mood. What about the, you know, rest of the ecosystem? And I realize that, you know, we are talking with a shark expert, so he's may or may not know about the rest of the ecosystem, but at least I can find out about one critter that I don't want to tangle with.
Yeah, there's, you know what, and, okay, I know this is, I label it with Shark Week just because it is during this time, but there's a lot of other things that aren't shown on Shark Week. It's kind of like any other kind of show that you watch, but you talk to the people off air. It's not really what's shown. I mean, the whole reason that Shark Week started years and years and years ago was for knowledge and conservation. It wasn't, you know, it wasn't started to talk about attacks or show people that were riding the fins of a great white and look what I accomplished. That wasn't the point of it. Now it's turned into, I mean, hell, over the years of us watching Shark Week, isn't it pretty much most of it about great whites breaching off of Seal Island in South Africa? Do they breach in California? Do they breach in Gulf of Mexico? Do they breach in South America? It's not so much about this is the plight of this species. There's still people that are out there that are fishing them, that are hunting them, you know, shark fin soup. They'll pull them up on board, cut the fins off, throw the carcass back in the water and not do anything with it. At that point, the fish is suffocating, can't swim. It's kind of like cutting you down to a bloody stump and saying, here, just, you got to walk home now.
Well, so, if I cut to a bloody stump, I'm not thinking I'm going to walk. If you cut my arms and legs off and I can't swim, which is what happens to a shark, then they just call me Bob, because that's all I do is bob in the water.
But I mean, you know, and that stuff that I think is overlooked in the past years of once, you know, Air Jaws came out, I think that was like 2009 on Shark Week, or maybe even before that was when Air Jaws aired. And it literally was the whole week of these sharks breaching. It's like, all right, well, they're killing seals and they're trying to kill things that look like seals. I understand what this is from a certain perspective. It's once a year, there's one week dedicated to these animals. And the general public does not pay attention to anything about these animals, unless you live in a coastal region, until it's aired on TV. So it's like, all right, let's compile the thing that, and this is where Discovery Channel comes in, let's compile the thing that I think that people are most going to be interested about, because it's, wow, this two-ton creature is fully bringing itself out of the water in a hunting strategy. It's not swimming behind it. It's a vicious, blunt, I need to get this over with for my food, that sort of attack. The great white is actually extremely, extremely timid and doesn't seem like it would be, but a lot of attacks that happen in California, Australia, where these animals are completely prevalent and there's an abundance of them, they're one of two things. Sharks don't have hands like we do. Their teeth, their mouth, their forward sensory organs, those are the way that they feel, the way that they test their environment. If you look like prey, they're going to come up, bite to see if you are. Like, sharks by nature don't have a taste for blood because we're not their natural prey. They're, you know, fish, seals, and the bigger ones, squid. So, one, there's a problem. If you taste like any of those animals, you might want to get yourself checked out. Two, it's due to a lack of resources for them, which is where the ecosystem end of it comes into it. So for a shark to become predatory towards humans isn't like the old saying, like with dogs and wolves, oh, once they got a taste of blood, that's what they're going to go for. Well, due to fisheries and fishing companies and lack of regulation, you become their only food source. So you take a 400-pound Pacific seal and you take a 250-pound human, if you do the math on it, all right, well, there's no really seals around at this time, but there's meat in the water. It sounds like it's in distress because of swimming habits. Let's go check this out. Hey, I can eat this, and I don't have anything else to eat. So,
at my age, if I were out there on a board, I not only would sound like I was in distress, I'm in distress. And
I'm trying to figure this out. I don't know what the hell's going on.
Yeah, I'm kind of thinking, if you have managed to get me out on a surfboard in anything more than, you know, Water Park USA, somebody had me pee in a cup because there's an issue. I found out a long time ago me, gravity, balance, and agility do not go in the same sentence. So we are not putting me on a surfboard willingly. So there will be blood in the water because either I've gotten the crap knocked out of me or I've knocked the crap out of somebody else that put me on the surfboard. So, yeah, we are chumming at that point.
So, all right, with you being in Virginia, which on the Richmond side, you're pretty close to Virginia Beach.
And we're a little over an hour away. In about an hour and a half, I can be in the water.
Yeah. But, I mean, do you down by you guys, on, or over by you guys, and a little bit down, I should say, from where I'm at in Chicago, do you guys ever get, obviously it's going to be reported on the news if there are shark attacks. I know, I think it was 2008, there was a pretty big problem in Virginia Beach with bull sharks and lemons. Has there been anything of what you've seen of, like, shark attacks on the news in recent years or no?
You know, honestly, I can't tell you. I think just a couple of years ago there may have been one. Now, see, I don't follow Virginia Beach, which, now this is kind of sad. If I want to go to the beach, I go down to North Carolina, the Outer Banks. Reason being, they're not so slam-packed. I mean, most of the beaches in Virginia Beach, everybody here is going to them because it is so close. So I go down and I try to find a little secluded kind of, you know, less packed portion of Virginia or the Outer Banks.
Oh, so you search for the nudes then.
Okay, well, you found me out. Yes, because I like to have them laugh at me as I walk by and go, oh, look, a penis starter kit. See, you started that, not me. But, yeah, I mean, I don't think that there has been a shark attack in Virginia Beach for probably 2-3 years. Now, I mean, I could be wrong, but I don't recall it being such a large news event that, you know, it stuck in my mind.
Yeah, because there is, I mean, you know, most people think of Great Whites, you think of Australia, you think of California, some of the areas within, down by South America. But the eastern seaboard is a hotbed for Great Whites. Not only that, I mean, Great Whites, I think they get so much attention because they're the biggest, but
It's not just because they're the biggest. I mean, if you want to talk about the biggest shark, then you're going to talk about a, there's definitely bigger than Great Whites.
In the shark family, the largest is going to be the, in the predatory, is going to be the Great White. But there's the whale shark, which is harmless unless you happen to be swimming in front of that big gaping hole.
Yeah, but
hopefully
you
have
to be
out.
An amoeba before it cares about you. And you have to be an amoeba before he cares about you, because most of what he eats is shrimp and amoeba, which is strange. How can such a huge creature survive on, you know, plankton? And, well, to me, it makes me think of going to that Shishi Fru Fru restaurant where they bring out these little portions and then they smear some crap on the plate to make it look pretty. Meanwhile, I'm looking at it going, where's the food?
But, yeah.
You know, I guess that's what they've evolved to. I mean, that's the only way that you can put it. That's what they have evolved to. But, yeah, if you... Yeah, you put that little shishi frou-frou one or two bites on my plate. Now I'm sending it back and asking the chef to do his actual job.
Can I just get a steak, some potatoes, and something of sustenance?
Yeah. Well, it's like tonight. quite well. Probably a pound of new potatoes and hope did homemade, she didn't make crap. I cannot think of what I want to say. Onions, gravy, beef. Oh, no, help
Southern. Me. Southern comfort food.
Now, that's what I had with it. Hey, honey. Salisbury steak. There we go. Jeez. You can tell I spent all day out in the... heat. Just brain farts left and right. But you know, I probably a pound of potatoes and probably a pound of Salisbury steak. Yeah. And these are what it takes to give me sustenance and help me survive. How can this huge whale shark survive on this plankton?
That's, you know, I've thought about that. Like, over the years, I've been huge into oceanography and just, you know, mammal study, fish study, that kind of stuff. I know we've never talked about that on the show, but that's kind of why I want to do this tribute to Shark Week. If they had Whale Week, I'd do one then. If they had Seal Week, I'd do one then. But
no, I don't think so.
You know, yeah,
we would. So I mean, how boring would Seal Week be?
Dude, they're awesome. I think, all right, there's certain creatures that would be... Yeah, would be boring. Once that,
good evening,
that's what
ladies
I'm...
and gentlemen. Welcome to Full Spectrum Radio, and welcome to Two-Toed Sloth Week. No. Oh, by the way, today is Left-Handers Day, so to all you left-handers, congratulations for being in your right mind.
Or the right brain. Aha!
Yeah. Yeah, I guess it depends on how you want to term it. Yeah, you beat me on that one. I'll give you that point. Madam Scorekeeper, will you please post 1 point for Matt? Thank you.
Thank you. So, in your years on this earth, have you ever, and I'm not saying at a, you know, aquarium in a, you know, controlled environment where you're behind glass. Have you ever been anywhere where you encountered even a nurse shark?
And a lot of you are going to think this is funny, and Matt, I know you will. I am an avid fisherman. I absolutely love to fish. I have been to the ocean, well, actually both oceans at this point, you know, the left coast ocean, and obviously because I'm on the Atlantic seaboard, I've been to the Atlantic Ocean a couple of times. I have never seen a shark in the probably 10 times that I have been to either ocean, and I've never thrown a hook in salt water.
That is,
there you have it.
Really?
No, I'm dead serious, dude. I've never thrown a hook in salt water. Now,
well,
I've been out there, and my father-in-law has a, it's either 35, 38, something like that. Big damn sailboat. Beautiful boat. Been out on that. I've seen dolphins. I've seen the porpoises play. I even went out on a United States Navy submarine 250 miles off the coast of the Atlantic seaboard so we could hit the trench and dive. And for 2.5 hours, I stood up on the sail of this thing as it, you know, it surfaced going out. 2.5 hours I stood on the sail. I got to watch dolphins play in the wake. And then I got to watch whales play in the wake. Didn't see a shark the whole time.
No, they're also not as playful as what dolphins or whales are.
Yeah, I wasn't exactly expecting to, you know, watch one leap out of the air and, you know, snatch a seal in the midair. But, yeah, I mean, it's not like you can see a whole lot into the water anyway, even though you are in the water.
Yeah.
Just so you know, they don't make submarines out of see-through material.
Well, I was going to say, yeah, your problem that you ran into was no windows, and plus the thing was, what, probably close to 700-800 feet long?
That's classified. If I actually told you how long it was, I would have to come to Chicago and kill you. So I can't tell you.
Yeah. But, I mean, just ballpark.
I will say this. It was longer than a football field.
Yeah. So you're on a military submarine, not in a exploratory submersible.
Correct. And
yeah.
I will say this. I know for a fact it was a United States Navy submarine and not a Polish submarine because we didn't even have a screen door. Kind of pissed about that.
Should be happy about that.
And for those that get offended by that, yeah, too bad. I'm part Polish anyway, so I can make fun of my own ancestry, and you just have to get over it.
And I'm half, and I laughed as well.
But I mean, it was really cool to go out and watch the dolphins, and then, you know, to see whales. But no, I can't say this. We saw any sharks out there. And, you know, I will tell you, I was amazed how clear blue the water is 200 miles offshore. It was gorgeous. But, yeah, there weren't any sharks just hanging out with us.
Yeah, Well, the reason I ask that, I grew up in Houston, and we used to go to Galveston all the time. And we had a neighbor who was actually, well, that wouldn't have made sense. When I lived in Houston, we had a neighbor that we used to go fishing with all the time, who's still one of my close friends, is his son. He's no longer with us. But we go down to Galveston. They'd throw their surf rods out in the water. So the big, long, you know, 10, 15-foot long fishing poles. So they'd launch those out with meat or, you know, whatever they were using at the time on the end of it. And his name was Louie. And he would always mess with his son's name is Jason. He would always yell out when Jason and I were playing in the surf, like, "Yes, I'm Matthew, careful, the sharks, they are around." We'd scream and we'd run in the shore. Well, the one day that he was messing with us and he screamed it out, it wasn't kind of like the boy who cried wolf. It was, we were still, you know, 5 and 6 years old, somewhere in there, that we book it in. And we're about waist deep, so figure about a 4 or 5 year old child, it's only going to be, what, 2 feet of water maybe? Foot and a half of water?
Mm-hmm.
As soon as we got, and we were, you know, up to our shoulders, our necks at the time, and he yells it, so we start coming in as fast as we can because we're freaked out. As soon as we got to about a foot and a half of water, one of the rods just goes hard over. And so it's letting out line like crazy. Well, we were basically, from my memory, we were probably, from where the line was, we were six, probably 10 yards away from it. Not too far, and it bolted the other direction. Well, what they had on the end of that line was a 4.5-foot black tip reef shark. So that time it ended up not to be a lie. The sharks, they were around. And not far from us at all. So think of a 4.5-foot black tip reef shark and think of a 4 and 5 or 5 and 6 year old kid. They're about the same size. That would have been kind of an even match.
Yeah. And one of the things that I do, I am going to ask Vince about, is a cookie cutter shark. I never heard of it, but my neighbor was working with me, helping me fix my riding mower, which, by the way, I told you the bearings on the spindle for the blade carriers was bad. So we got that replaced. Holy crap, is that thing much quieter now. Doesn't sound like it's going to self-destruct. But anyway, I told him that tonight's show was, you know, a dedication to Shark Week and about sharks and so forth. And he tells me that he's been watching Shark Week on TV. And he says, you know, are you familiar with cookie cutter sharks? I'm like, well, no, most of my wife's cookie cutters are like, you know, flowers or, you know, little toys or something like that. Needless to say, I got called a jackass, but he then informs me that this is one that takes, I guess, investigative bites. I had no idea what he was talking about. So I definitely want to find out about a cookie cutter shark when Vince joins us.
Well, the cookie cutter shark.
Sound like an idiot.
Yeah, the cookie cutter shark. Hold on. I told you I.
In a moment.
Yeah, I know. But I'm going to give you my take on the cookie cutter shark.
Well, I'd rather hear his because I don't trust you. I don't think you know what the hell you're talking about.
Not surprising.
I love the way I shut you right up, though.
Yeah. Now the cookie cutter shark is that it's more in the dogfish family, which is in the shark family. What they have, and the reason they call it cookie cutter, they have real small serrated top teeth, but their bottom teeth look like a piranha. And what they'll do is they'll latch onto a fish. It doesn't have to be a shark, or it could be a whale, it could be a sunfish, it could be anything. And they're kind of like a lamprey, to where they take small circles of flesh out, which is why they call them cookie cutter, because they're like perfect circles. So they'll latch on with the top teeth and cut away with the bottom teeth, which they're, if you see the mouth of one of these things, they're pretty menacing. But yeah, they all, and if I remember correctly, and I'm going to have to ask Vince this too, if I remember correctly, it's kind of like a mosquito where they release an enzyme to where the fish itself doesn't know that it's being chewed apart. That kind of numbs the area. So, but they'll find
for a person. I mean, if a cookie cutter takes a chunk out of my ass, will I have some sort of an enzyme in my backside that I won't know I've had, you know, a cheek chomped off?
Well, I need to lose some weight. No, you're thin enough the way it is.
I was going to say, good Lord, man, I've got to run in circles in the shower now to get wet. What are you trying to do to me? Make me feel like a Lord, bud?
But, no, they're kind of like a shark version of a parasite, if you will. They're just...
No.
They... Go ahead.
Over the years, what's evolved that these little, and you mentioned kind of a parasite, and that's the first thing that comes to my mind is you always see these small fish running around with the shark, and like a shark is leaving a gill open, a gill fin, so this little fish can go up in there and clean everything. Why don't they become munchable?
Usually that happens more with, it happens with two different scenarios, is a warm water or a colder water shark that will come into warmer water as their body's adjusting. They also, I mean, I can't say for sure, but they have to have some sort of, hey, I'm not breathing as well as I was. Then over time, hey, these little things can help out. Oh, look, there's some. Go swim over by them, and then everybody's happy. Little fish get fed. Big fish get cleaned. On more of the deep water sharks, like the makos and the white tips, oceanic white tips, that's the word I was forgetting, that you'll see them hovering around them a lot. The other thing with the small fish is, growing up on an ocean, it's, for a smaller fish, and you see them a lot, especially around whales, shipwrecks, they experienced a ton in, with the Indianapolis, where the sailors would report about all these large schools of fish that are underneath their rafts, which they thought that that's why the sharks were coming in to eat the smaller fish. And if you're out in the sun all the time as a fish, if you see something that's going to give you a little bit of shade and cool you off and you can chill and relax, why wouldn't you go to it? So would that possibly bring sharks in? Yeah. But those aren't the predatory fish for them. The small fish are going to hang around as a shark is just cruising the ocean in the deep water aspects. They're just going to cruise the ocean with these little fish, you know, swimming away as hard as they possibly can underneath them to stay in the shade. Plus, they also, if the shark does find something, they're not, they eat like you. They're not, you know, clean eaters and dabbing their mouths. There's crap flying all over the place. So they'll get underneath them, and they get little morsels and all that kind of stuff, too. So why would you have your helpers over millions of years of evolution? Why would you have them be like, oh, yeah, you know, that's that little tiny thing, yeah, that's going to tide me over? No, it's just kind of a partnership, if you will.
All right. Well, I'll take your word for it. I mean, one has to complement the other. I mean,
yeah.
You know, just like that, pardon the French, little asshole that hangs around you from time to time. And we all have that individual.
Oh, yeah.
Choose not to, you know, sacrifice them to God simply because at some point in time they're a benefit to you. Is that kind of what you're getting at?
Kind of, yeah. That's it. In a nutshell, I guess that would be it.
Okay.
Hey, what do you know about the Ampelea Lorenzini?
Try that one in English.
Ampelea of Lorenzini, one of the shark's best sensory organs that they have.
Well, I mean, what do you want to know about it? I mean, I can tell you anything and everything about it.
All right, go ahead.
I can't talk shit about it. Well, I mean, it's a sensory organ.
The Ampelea Lorenzini
Well,
the Ampelea Lorenzini is, if in a shark's snout, they have the, it's almost these like jelly-filled pockets that have a small, tiny hair that's inside of there. What it does is that is what a shark will use to hone in on any sort of electromagnetism that every time you move, if you were to move your arm right now, there's electrical current as minute as you could possibly think that's being generated by that. Any of the shark species does have the Ampelea lorenzini. What that does is they pick up on that if they're in murky water, you know, especially that's kind of one of the main sensory organs that they'll use in exits to where rivers come into oceans, and it stirs up all the silt and all the sand. They're picking up that electromagnetism. I watched a really, really cool show. It wasn't during Shark Week. It was just a random one where they took a hammerhead, and it was in kind of in the mangroves in the birthing area, the hammerhead and the lemon sharks and all that stuff in Florida, that they hooked up a very, it was almost like, and Dennis, you know this being in the construction field, it was a millivolt. And the sharks are swimming around, and they've switched on this little apparatus, little disc thing that they built that gave out 1 millivolt of energy. And it was kind of like ringing the dinner bell to where they all congregated around this portion of sand. Believe it or not, due to, it's not the same thing. It works a little bit different as far as the sensory organs go, but dolphins do have pretty much the same thing. Yes, Dennis, your message is correct, and I just saw it pop up. So that is our man. Are you there?
That is, and you left. Matt.
You left? Yeah.
Okay. You're still there. So on the board is Vince, I'm assuming.
Yes,
that is him. So I'm assuming you know his number.
Yeah. Right. Yes, that is him.
All right. Well, excellent. I'll go ahead and bring him in. The other option is I'm going to send you another message and say, call her online, I'm going to scream. But since you know the number, I will bring him right in. So we now have Vince Kelly joining us on air. Vince, good evening, sir. Welcome to the show.
Good evening, gentlemen. How are we doing tonight?
Hey.
Doing all right?
Let's not be so free and easy with that gentleman word. I've met Matt.
I've heard those things, but I digress.
I appreciate that because it probably will come from him later on about me.
Understood. I just caught those tail end. What were you talking about as far as dolphins and sharks sharing a sensory organ? I caught part of that and wanted to hear what you were talking about.
Oh no, I was talking about the Ampelea lorenzini and how sharks use that to detect prey, whether it's, you know, underneath the sand, and I was also just kind of digressing into how dolphins and whales actually have somewhat of the same technique to find it, but it's not electrical sensory, it's more of the sonar use.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct. Cool. Excellent. And you guys want to talk about sharks, huh? All right. I'm ready for this, guys.
So if you wouldn't mind, why don't you give everybody a little bit of background of what you did, what you do, and how you got into it.
Wow. How many hours do we have left on the show?
Currently we have 1 hour and 10 minutes, so feel free.
I'll try to give you a cliff note version. I got into it just as a young child. My first trip to the Shedd Aquarium, I was about 4 years old. And my parents took me there, and I went to see the Caribbean Reef Dive, And I don't know if you're familiar with that. That's a large circular tank in the very end when you go into the Shedd Aquarium. And the diver gives a underwater presentation while feeding the animals. And to an adult, it's amazing, but to a four-year-old, it's downright, you know, miraculous. And I thought it was the coolest thing on the planet. And, you know, on the way home, I was telling my parents that, you know, I want to do that, so that's what I want to do. And then, you know, my parents are like, that's great, we're glad to hear it, but, you know, next week I'm sure he's going to want to be a fireman or something, you know, which, you know, understandable. But, you know, I never really ventured off that. Every year in school, what do you want? You know, I want to work with, you know, sharks and dolphins. There was never any doubt that I really wanted to wrap my passions around the sea. And it wasn't long before I found out that that's the only way I was going to be happy. You know, right out of school, I went to college at UCLA, university closest to LaGrange Avenue, otherwise known as Marine Valley. With biology, you know, study biology and educationally wise, you know, I didn't have a vast background, but I was fortunate enough to get into the volunteer program at the Shedd Aquarium back in 1993, and I was able to learn for some of the best in the field in every aspect of it. I mean, it's amazing the people you get to meet. Dr. Sylvia Earle, Richard Ellis, just some of the just, you know, most amazing minds in the world in marine biology I got to meet and listen to personally and got to learn from. And, you know, it was an incredible classroom of life for, I was there 19 years. And during that time, I actually started off in the marine mammal department as a volunteer in the marine mammal department and would work with the dolphins, whales, sea otters, penguins, and seals. And after only 3 months of volunteering there, they saw just what a maniacal knucklehead I was about it and actually hired me to help raise some of their penguins for a penguin exhibit that they have. They had, actually had a collection trip to Antarctica. And I was hired to help raise some penguins off-site. And, you know, once I got a taste of the work, that was it. And I went on from there to dive in the Caribbean Reef Exhibit, the Wild Reef Exhibit, and just about every body of water they have there. And I've been a enthusiast, you could say, now for, you know, since I was 4 years old. But I was fortunate enough to dive. You know, the diving in Chicago isn't always the best for shark enthusiasts. So I was very fortunate to have some of the best shark diving in Chicago and to be able to dive the Caribbean Reef where we had, when I first started there, there was 8 to 10 and a 12-foot nurse shark, very large nurse sharks. And towards the middle to end of it, they had bonnet head sharks, which actually a variety of hammerheads. In the Wild Reef exhibit, the Philippine exhibit, I was fortunate enough to be able to work with some of the animals being introduced into that exhibit. There's a little wider variety of species. But it was even more fun when I got to actually venture out into the wild and encounter some of these animals in the wild. It's funny because when my friends and I go on dive boats, you know, you pass by boats a lot of times, if people see a shark fin, that's when everybody's jumping out of the boat. If we see a shark fin, that's when we're all jumping in. We're tipping the dive master extra money. Saying, bring us where the sharks are, buddy. You know, let's go check them out. And it's a really true and rare treat to be able to see a shark in the wild, and I've been very fortunate to be able to see sharks up close and personal in captivity and the wild.
That's, get into it a little bit later. Of last year, of what we talked about last night, of almost to this day, of your expedition. But what's the one species that you're kind of leery about getting in with besides the notorious great white? But as far as demeanor and all that.
Well, that's easy. Homo sapien. And I'm not kidding. I'm not kidding at all. Sharks are, I don't fear it. And when you said besides the great whites, I don't, as you know, as we spoke earlier, is that I went on an expedition and went diving with great whites, and I have no fear of great whites. I have respect for great whites. I'm not a fool, but I'm not going to wear a tuna necklace and jump in the water with them. But I also know that they're not out to get me. And I am very comfortable diving in the water with great whites. I am not leery of them in any way, shape, or form. And there is no species of shark I'm leery of. I'm respectful. There is a big difference. I'm respectful of it, but I'm respectful of any wild animal. I'm respectful of a dog if it comes up to me, I don't know it. If somebody's dog comes up to me, I don't know, I'm respectful of the dog. So I really have, honestly, no different treatment of a shark than I do a dog I haven't met yet.
Yeah, and I don't have my dive license, but I've been through, you know, well, every place I go is tropical, out in Hawaii and the Caribbean. I've been in water with sharks with, you know, there was a couple bull sharks that were around, nurse sharks, you know, stuff like that. And
if you've been in the ocean, you've been around sharks, whether you know it or not.
Oh, yeah. They know you're there before you'll know.
Exactly. Back when Shark Week used to be good, there was a clip that I loved that showed an aerial shot over the coast of Florida. And it was going over all these beachgoers, and they're having fun, and they're waving at the helicopter. Yay! And the helicopter pans over about 300 yards, and there's silhouettes of, no lie, had to be 200 sharks. You see the silhouette of like a massive crowd of sharks, and which of course if they knew, they're like, ah! But if they knew what was factual, that these sharks are in the waters at all times and people swim them without incident, you know, it wouldn't be a big deal.
Yeah, well, you know, and a lot of people don't know too is sharks, just like every other animal, do have body language.
Absolutely.
If you see certain postures. And if you have knowledge and you see certain postures, get the hell out of the water.
Well, the great thing about animals is, you know, they have to have a reason. You know, there is the only animal that will attack without reason or provocation, again, is the dreaded Homo sapien. Everything else has an instinct that knows that, you know, if I get injured, I could be dead. You know, because wild animals, you know, they sustain injury, that's it. They can't hunt anywhere, they're gone. And if they expend too much energy, they don't have enough energy to hunt for their next meal. So in order to divert that much energy to something like, you know, attacking someone, they have to be darn sure that it's for a good reason. They're not going to just fly off the handle for no reason. And if you're going into the ocean where sharks are going to be, you have to realize this isn't Disneyland. It's like it's essentially the same as going into the deep woods and looking at a grizzly bear. I mean, you're in the wild. They're not coming and invading your home. You're invading theirs. So you need to know the rules. You have to be aware of the rules before you show up and be educated and know what is right and wrong. And you're right. Sharks do have body language. Some more than others. One of my favorites, the gray reef shark is one of the ones that will really display a cat-like posture as soon as it's ticked off. I mean, it'll arch its back and drop its pectoral fins and jut its teeth out and let you know, whatever you're doing, you might want to stop. Because there's no uncertain messages there. But you're right, sharks do give that. And even before that, though, just knowing where they are, knowing when to go in the water, and being aware of it. It's all a matter of just being aware of your surroundings and being respectful of the wildlife that you're swimming with. If you're going in the ocean, you have to accept the risk. But you can minimize them.
Yeah.
Now, you mentioned the aerial photograph with, you know, probably 200 silhouettes a couple of hundred yards out. What was the difference in that and, you know, the one lone surfer being attacked by a lone shark in the middle of, you know, a long stretch of beach? Why were those 200 or so sharks out there but not coming towards humanity, I guess?
Well,
and what was the barrier?
Why they were gathered is anybody's guess. Why they don't go towards humanity is because you're not on the menu. They don't see you as food. You are not what they hunt. Now, if the problem is that there's cases of mistaken identity. But it's most likely user error. For instance, the majority of shark attacks happen to either spear fishermen or surfers. Surfers like to surf at dusk and dawn when surf is the best, and that is when sharks come out to eat, unfortunately. And also, surfers from a shark's vantage point, where they're looking upwards at them, quite often could resemble a seal or a turtle or another animal that they normally hunt upon. So a lot of times they get what's called an investigative bite. The reason that 90% of shark attacks are not fatal is because the majority of the time these animals aren't trying to make a kill shot. They have powerful enough jaws to break you in half the first time. The reason that you see these pictures of surfers holding up surfboards with pieces out of them and they survive these attacks, and why Rodney Fox is alive, is that because they take advice and say, what is this? And when they back off, they say, that's not what I thought, and they leave. And so
they taste the fiberglass and everything, and they go, that tastes like shit. I don't want to eat that one.
Thank you. They're like, wait a second. What's this? This is not steel blubber. So, yeah, they back off. So, to answer your question, they don't come towards humanity. They never come towards humanity knowingly. You know, it's a case of mistaken identity. They don't come towards humanity because you're not on the menu. I mean, just because you eat meat, you could see a dead raccoon on the side of the road, and you're not going to go, lunch. You know, I mean, it's the shark also has particular taste. And it is the same with, you know, when people freak out about getting blood in the water. Oh, my God, I had a cut or something. Human blood is nothing close to what seal or marine mammal blood is. It's very high fat content. It sends off a much stronger signal. Might human blood get a shark's attention? Certainly, but you know, to a degree. But it's not going to get it excited like it would a hot, high oily content such as a seal or a marine mammal.
Well, one of the things that we were talking about earlier is also is when a lot of times for these predatory sharks, above and beyond, like, if you're something that can take out a human, a tiger, a bull, a lemon, a great white, you know, the larger species that are more known for these shark attacks, and everybody looks at the great white like a bad guy. Well, the bull has more kills, and the lemon shark has more.
For the record, I don't look at the great white as a bad guy. I just say, for the record, I don't look at the great white as a bad guy.
Yeah. No, I mean, as far as how it's portrayed,
but I'm just kidding. I understand.
Yeah, I mean, the bull, the lemon, I mean, they have more human fatalities than what the great white does. But
you also have to keep in consideration this also because those animals are going to be more often in areas where there's going to be human contact. Because
exactly.
The bulls, as you know, they venture into freshwater even. You know, they've been caught, believe it or not, did you know there was a bull shark caught in Nile, Illinois? In the Mississippi River. Yeah. The southernmost point of Illinois. There's a little town called Nile. They caught a bull shark in the Mississippi River in Nile, Illinois.
Yeah, that's just north of St. Louis, right?
Correct. And so what I'm saying is that, you know, so bull sharks can travel thousands of miles in fresh water. So they are going to be encountering humans much more often.
Yeah. No, it's, That's the one thing that always amazes me about sharks is how well they are to adapt. I mean, I'm not saying, and I'm sure you're not saying either, if you're out surfing, you're out bodyboarding, you know, whatever, if you see a fin, don't be nervous if you don't know anything about them.
Oh, because it's a natural human reaction, of course. I have to be honest, as comfortable as I am with sharks, if I was surfing and I saw a fin, I'd be scared shitless because I know that this is the point where I'm putting myself in a position where I could be attacked because I could be sending a wrong message. So that is one instance that I would be uncomfortable because I know that I'm putting myself in a place where a shark might think I'm food and not a human. So I'd be uncomfortable too, sure. But you know, it's important to know where you are, know your surroundings, and know the rules.
But you know, when it comes down to it, though, like what I was getting at before, I'm sorry. Sorry, Dennis, to interrupt. But on a lot of human attacks where a shark becomes predatory towards humans, what I mentioned earlier was about how there's a lot of industry that's involved in that, which is overfishing, taking out their natural prey. And from what I've learned over the years of looking into it, sharks do have a migratory pattern. They'll hit their checks depending on where they are, but if they show up and they're like great white, there's no seals, you know, whatever the main dish of what that shark species is in their migratory pattern, if that's not there and they're hungry, there could be a negative interaction with people.
I would disagree. They still don't see you as food. If anything, they would then look to a large fish. You're still way down on that totem pole. I mean, you know,
yeah.
If we were starving on a desert island, we'd eventually get to that raccoon, that raccoon roadkill on the side of the road. But not until we ate every banana and coconut on the island. Okay? So while that may be possible, if they were starving enough that they would seek out just any piece of meat is true, they're not. Again, humans are not in their menu. While there is overfishing, and especially for the large, like great whites, seals are on the rebound, and actually great whites are on the rebound because of seal populations. And there's more. And as far as migratory patterns, you have to understand also is that we've only started to learn about their migratory patterns in the past few decades. We have very limited information, and only in the past maybe 10 years has GPS technology come along far enough to get any kind of really long-term data to be able to accumulate. So there's, while we do know some about it, there's far much more that we don't know, and we're learning more every day. So anybody who says they know anything about sharks' migratory patterns is lying because they're guessing. It's theory or hypothesis. We're estimating and we're gathering info, but nobody truly knows the migratory patterns of sharks, or they still don't know where their nurseries are. We still don't know where they mate. Yeah, and for all the technology we have today, we still have no idea where great white sharks' nursing grounds are, and that alone tells you just how limited our knowledge is.
Now, I actually have two questions. Penguins, we know that there's a couple of various islands where, depending upon the breed of the penguin, they seem to migrate to there every year, and that's where the migratory breeding is done.
Forgive me, Freestate, for the penguin or for sharks? I didn't catch that part.
For penguins, we know that they have, you know, a couple of islands here and there that they always seem to migrate to.
Okay.
As big as this globe is and as much research as there is, we have no idea how do we even know that sharks have a quote-unquote breeding area?
Well, we have more sharks, so we know there's got to be a breeding ground somewhere. But I get what you're saying. I understand what you're saying, and I'm just being a smartass. But, you know, there has to be one, so we just don't know where it is. But thing is,
I mean, let's take your most feared animal, being Homo sapien, they'll breed anywhere. How do we know that sharks don't do that also?
Well, the thing is, I'd be lying if I told you I knew. We don't know. But the thing is that sharks have such a vast area, and great whites only have so many numbers, and so they very rarely run into each other in the open ocean. So you have to assume there has to be an area that they all acknowledge as, this time of year, this is where we're getting together and hooking up. Let's get it on. Because if not, it would never meet, because just the sheer vastness of the ocean, you wouldn't have enough chance encounters for them to mate. Even in areas that are known for their feeding grounds, it's such wide open. You're talking tens of thousands of miles, that just because there could be a few hundred sharks in that area that never run into each other. So they have to have some area at some time of year where they gather and mate.
Where they all just get together.
I'm sorry?
You're saying that they have to have some kind of area where, you know, once or twice a year they all just migrate to and have a giant festival.
Of course, this is pure speculation because, as we said, we don't know much about it. But when you think about it, yes, because there's so little chance for just chance encounters for these animals in the wild. If they didn't have a regular time of year and place to meet and mate, I can't see how the species would survive and procreate, because simply waiting to run into another great white in the open ocean is, you know, something that if they didn't go to the same spots all the time, they could go their entire lifetimes without coming across another shark. The ocean is that vast.
Well, that's what's always had me confused about, like the oceanic white tip and the mako, which are, you know, deep water open ocean species. Yeah, I mean, you have a globe that's covered in 70% water. Take out, just by simple numbers, take out, the Arctic and Antarctic as far as habitable areas for these sharks. So they need warmer water. They need that. So it puts you in a belt on certain parallels. So call it 40% of the ocean around the globe is where it's habitable.
Okay.
They have to have some sort of, so 40% of the globe, which would be 10% more than what the landmass that covers the globe is, and there's no way that if you have a friend in the Ukraine that you don't talk to them at all, but you're going to happen to run into them and you guys are going to hook up.
Exactly. That's exactly what I'm talking about. So I'd be lying if I told you I knew that there was, I'm not saying holding back some great scientific discovery. I have no idea. But logic would dictate there has to be some area where these guys congregate and mate.
Now, with as many as there are tagged, we can't narrow down one location where each one of those tagged sharks always seems to go?
Not yet. Again, it's funny how little that we know, and considering the technology we have, and GPS technology has only, you know, come so far recently. You have to keep in mind, we don't even know what time of year necessarily that they're doing things. So these tags that they're putting on them are not infinite. They only last so long. And so even if they tracked them for a 3-5 month period of time, it may not enough to catch where they're going for procreation purposes or anything else. These are things that I really think will come to light in the next decade or two because of the advances in technology in GPS and global positioning and all that good stuff. But we really haven't had a lot. When you say we have a lot of animals tagged, we do. But consider the amount of animals that there are out there and the quality of equipment that has been used on so many to tag them. Only a handful really have some of the newer, highest-tech GPS tracking devices that would allow them to really dictate what they're doing for an extended period of time, which is what you really need to do to get a full window of this animal's habits.
And that's part of what I was getting at, was somebody that's actually very well knowledgeable in the field versus myself, who doesn't know, pardon the French, jack shit. They always say that everything goes to Galapagos. Galapagos is the center of, apparently it's the center of the animal kingdom's world. I kind of doubt that highly, but a lot of animals do go to the Galapagos Islands for mating and procreation and so forth.
That's not necessarily true. It's just that the biodiversity of that area is higher than any other. Not a lot of animals necessarily come there from other areas. It's just that the Galapagos has such a wide range of species, a wide biodiversity, that there are a lot of different animals that mate and breed in that area. But not necessarily a lot of other animals come from other areas other than the Galapagos that come to the Galapagos. Do you understand?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, I've watched enough of the Animal Planet and all of those to be misled to the fact that, you know, pretty much the Galapagos Islands are the hub of, you know, virtually all animal life. No, it's really not.
I'm not dumb enough
to fall into that. And as I said, the sarcasm. But I just find it amazing that we can't even figure out where the sharks are gathering for procreation and so forth. My other question.
We know more about outer space than we do our own oceans.
Oh, yeah.
Above and beyond sharks, it's the same thing as the blue whale. Nobody knows, and that's the largest mammal on the planet, and nobody knows where their mating grounds are definitively. You know, there's ideas.
Well, that's what you love and hate about this field. There's the uncharted territory, but it's the unknown, and it's fun to find that. And
yeah. One
thing I discovered is that the more you learn, the more you realize, the less you know.
Oh, yeah.
True wisdom is realizing how little you know, and there's so much out there to be learned.
Yeah, I think that goes with any field. Honestly and truly.
No,
that is
just sharks.
That is a great statement.
No, it only applies to sharks.
That's it.
Oh, damn, man, I've been missing that all these years. Hang on a minute. I've got to switch my earbud over to the other ear because the sarcasm is starting to drip out of that ear.
I would love to talk about, though, exactly because we were discussing Shark Week earlier, what Shark Week has become. I'm curious, as, you know, lay people who watch this, is what do you guys think of Shark Week? I don't know how long you've watched it, if you've watched it in the past and watched it, what it's become now, and I'm curious as to what your opinion, if you have watched it for any kind of long term, what the product they used to put out and what is happening now.
We actually discussed that a little bit earlier. The same thing as you and I discussed, and I completely agree with you. Shark Week used to be about conservation, knowledge, and what we need to do as humans to conserve these animals and how important they are to the oceanic ecosystem. Now it's so-and-so got attacked. Hey, look, I rode the back of a great white fin. Not so much about how important they are. It's just kind of what they do and look how ferocious they are.
To me, what's extremely disappointing is that, as you said, the beginning used to be education through conservation, and now they're actually putting more myths out there than they are facts with their mockumentaries of the megalodon or the submarine shark. It's so disheartening for somebody who is such a shark lover, who, you know, couldn't be more thrilled when Shark Week came out and absolutely loved what it was, and to see that it's actually become the polar opposite of what it actually set out to do is really disheartening.
Well, and that was going to be one of my other questions. You touched on the megalodon.
Yes, sir.
I even hate to ask this, but I know what the answer is going to be. Is there, or potentially is there, such a thing as the megalodon?
Well, you know, I wouldn't be any kind of enthusiast or of science if I didn't say there is some chance. There is no such thing as zero chance in science. I mean, it's really rare. Is it possible? Is it possible? Sure.
It has a very slim, remote chance.
Is it likely? Hell no. I mean, you have to understand that these animals were surface feeders. I mean, they sound like they're deep water animals, like the goblin shark, which they, you know, you only seen one or two, if you open them alive ever, and they catch them in you know, fishing nets or seven gills. These guys fed at the surface. They fed large, you know, whales and dolphins and other sharks at the surface. How in the world could an animal that they say reaches 60, you know, to 80 feet in length, depending on who you're reading, how in the world would somebody not see that or would not have a carcass wash ashore? I like I said, nothing's impossible, but it's impossible.
It's the shark world's Nessie.
Yeah, it, you know, don't insult Nessie like that. I'm sorry.
To a realistic question, to a realistic question that I had earlier, and we got sidetracked, and I only got one of my questions in, but I'm going to throw the other one at you. I am a avid fisherman. Absolutely love to fish. However, I've been freshwater all my life. I have gotten close to brackish water a few times, but I've never thrown a hook in salt water. What breeds of shark, or are there any breeds of shark that are comfortable in freshwater that I would have to worry about, say, 50 miles inland?
Sure, the bull shark. It's known as the bull shark here. It's known as the Zambezi shark in Africa. The bull shark is the most famous one of all because, like as I said, that's the one that's been found as far as the southern tip of Illinois. It's traveled thousands of miles of freshwater of the Zambezi River into Africa. So if you want to say concern, though, just be aware of that they'll be there, it would be the bull shark. Bull sharks have been known to venture into freshwater estuaries thousands of miles up.
And that one goes into a realistic question. I don't buy into a lot of the hype. And to answer your question about what I think about Shark Week and so forth, I haven't watched it in probably 3 years simply because I started detecting. Like every time I would watch an episode, my bullshit detector would go off. I'm like, okay, this is all just wrong. I know they're just stretching things here now to get ratings. So I disagree with, and it's a huge problem with our press now, period, be it television, radio, news, print, any of the above. All they want to do, if it bleeds, it leads. That is their motto. If it bleeds, it leads. So
oh,
they
sure.
Talk
the,
about
it's
it
the same.
Time.
Unfortunately, the pit bulls suffer the same fate. Anything that has potential violence is romanticized and exploited to a ridiculous degree.
You know, the one thing I do want to ask you about, though, as far as species goes, the one shark that's kind
of... one of 100.
No, the one shark that's kind of indiscriminate and as far as anything in its diet is the tiger.
I was waiting for you to say that. I saw that coming, yes. Okay.
So,
and your question is?
No, my question is, when we were talking about how you don't have a fear of any, or wouldn't have any question about any of those species, well, the tiger, I mean, it's a shark that'll eat metal. I mean, it's,
sure.
That's one that really doesn't care.
Okay, I understand that logic. Let me ask you this. Are you aware of how many shark fatalities are there are per year?
What, this past year or in the past?
I know. What's the average? The average per year. How many average shark deaths are there per year?
Ten.
And don't worry, I don't expect you to know this. I'm not trying to call you out. and most people don't know this information. I'm just curious what you think.
No, no, shark fatalities is usually only.
I see Google going on right now. Stop it right now.
No. My phone's on my lap. My computer's on the side. Per year, it's usually only single digits normally.
Correct. You're looking at an average of 5 people a year. Now, if tiger sharks were so indiscriminate, as you say, they are in the water all the time, especially in the Bahamas, around the Caribbean, with human contact constantly, in Hawaii, all the time. You know, 5 fatalities worldwide of all species. Okay? So think of that. If tiger sharks were really that indiscriminate and wanted to see humans as food, they aren't even responsible for a single human death some years. So
yeah.
how could you possibly, what argument can you make?
Well, kind of what I'm getting at is more. Go ahead, Dennis.
Being that it is Shark Week, you know, there's memes on every damn thing. One of the things that I saw was 10 people are killed on average per year by sharks. 100 are killed by cows, which should have its week.
Right.
I couldn't do anything but laugh.
14 people a year are killed by coconuts. That's no lie. Newsweek did a great article on sharks and was trying to put it in perspective. And there are all the things that kill people more than sharks. One of them was coconuts. 14 people a year, on average, get hit on the head by a coconut and die. Yet, you do not see people encountering a palm tree and running and screaming for their lives. Unless
we're not talking allergies kill them. The fact that a coconut fell on their head.
Coconut fell on their head and split their coconut open, yes. Plumbing accidents. Plumbing accidents kill more humans than sharks. I mean, of course, domestic pets quadruple. I mean, it's 100 times. I mean, this, people are irrational about their fears of sharks. Should they be respectful? Of course. But to be afraid of them, when literally 5 people a year die in them, when there's, you know, probably a half a billion people in the water with them all year at any given time, is ridiculous.
Well, Matt can attest that I have 3 pit bull dogs.
I also have a pit bull.
Awesome. What coloration? What striation?
I have a blue. I have a beautiful blue boy that was rescued from a fighting ring in California, and he's an absolute joy. I absolutely love him.
That will completely sidetrack me, but that will be my next one.
Is next week dog week? Because I'll come on for that, too.
Oh, God. Trust me, if we have dog week, I will put video and everything of my dogs.
Make sure I get invited on that one, too.
Oh, by all means. But I have an 8-month-old grandson that comes and spends every Monday night with us. My dogs, and they just are absolutely fanatical about the baby. If he makes a whimper, they run to us like there's a problem, you have to go fix it. I've got a red, I have a brindle, and I have a mostly white with black spots.
Very nice. I'm a big fan of brindles too. It was either a blue or a brindle for me when I was picking them up, but I like them all.
Yeah. Well, my next one will be a blue. Simply now, does yours have the blue eyes?
No, he does not have the blue eyes. He's got the standard brownish blue eyes, but he's a handsome boy.
Yeah, I absolutely love them, and they're as misunderstood as sharks.
Absolutely.
They truly are, in my opinion. My 3 have never snipped at anybody. You know, random thought. Last night I had two local law enforcement officers at my fence, unexpected, asking me about somebody in my neighborhood. All three of my dogs, you know, they barked to alert me they were there. They went to the fence. They pop up on the top rail of the fence, and they're like, "Hey, how are you?" And tails just wagging like crazy. They're certainly not aggressive. It's all in how you raise them. But sharks, I think, are as misunderstood as pit bulls.
If not more.
The media, yeah, probably more. I mean, the media.
Only because we know more about terrestrial animals than aquatic animals. I mean, it's just so much, they're so much more mysterious because we can't physically, you know, encounter them on a regular basis like we do dogs.
True. And I think it's awesome that, you know, you have so much knowledge in sharks. And honestly, I think we need more people with your understanding of them, just as we need more people with the understanding of pit bulls and, you know, terrestrial animals. I think it would do a great deal to save wonderful animals.
I don't think it's any coincidence that I'm a champion of both species because they are so greatly misunderstood. I agree with you 100%.
And that's a big thing with, like, what we were talking about before about what Shark Week was and what it is now. You know, it was about knowledge. It was about conservation, which, I mean, there's still a decent element of that in it. It's just turned more to the look how menacing this is. But
the shame of it is that's an afterthought now. They're all about the ratings. Rob Lowe riding a few sharks via jet ski style or some water ski. Come on. I mean, the sharks are cool enough on their own. We don't need Rob Lowe riding them to make them interesting. You know, the sharks are cool enough on their own. We don't need somebody riding them to make them interesting. Let them give them their face value. The sharks are fast.
Rob Lowe is somebody still that anybody gives a shit about?
I'm sorry, I missed that.
I said Rob Lowe is still somebody that anyone gives a shit about?
Well, obviously Discovery Channel has a low budget for their client, for their talent, what can I say?
Well, this is going to prove exactly what you're talking about, Vince. Right now, the show that's on Shark Week, I have it on mute, but I have it in the background. The show that's on, hold on, let me see the name of it real quick. It is Spawn of Jaws, The Birth. This is the best part of it. The person that they have on right now is Paul Walker, who's joining them on the expedition.
Yeah, you know the sad thing about all this is that I was such a huge fan of Discovery Channel. I mean, I'm 43 years old. So, you know, I was young when all this was developed. I kind of grew up with it. And, you know, it was intriguing that, you know, the Shark Week started. Right? I was really in a fever pitch of it. And, you know, to have something that was so cool and so, not pure, but more purist, if you will, for a shark lover's point of view, compared to what it is now. It's just such a sad thing. I really respected Discovery Channel for what they did, and I thought they were a legitimate science channel. I really took them seriously, and I you know, for years I thought, this is run by people who care about science. And, you know, all of a sudden that went just right out the window. I don't know if they changed their staff entirely or what, but it went from, you know, from a classroom to a circus. And that was just heartbreaking to me because Discovery Channel really, you know, inspired a lot of awe in me and made me think of things I wouldn't necessarily think of, and it was really a cool thing, and I thought that this is the kind of thing we should be having on TV, you know, instead of just watching stupid, you know, sitcoms. And this is what TV is supposed to be for, to inform people. And to have them start these mockumentaries and stuff, it was saddening. At the same time, I should mention
the National Geographic Channel has been trying to combat this by actually showing true educational films about sharks on the National Geographic Channel during Shark Week. And I encourage people, if they're true shark fans, to watch the National Geographic Channel.
Well,
yeah,
I think the biggest issue is, and it was pointed out by P.T. Barnum over 50 years ago, you have to pander to the lowest common denominator.
Oh, remember, P.T. Barnum was a dick, so you have to keep that in mind, too.
No, but he may have been a dick, but he was a genius.
Oh, no. He wasn't a genius. He was just a rich dick. There's a lot of people who, you know, that could find ways to exploit animals or people, make lots of money. That doesn't make you a genius. You just willing to be a dick. And then if you're willing to be a big enough dick, you can make lots of money. Some people, you know, have morals and scruples and have to make their money in a reasonable, sensible way. If I wanted to have a circus with animals to get people's attention, you know, but I would never dream of doing that. That's not something I would do. That's not in my morals. And so, you know, there will always be people that have the people that have the lowest morals are the easiest to make money because they have little qualms about it. They can appeal to common denominator because they are the lowest common denominator.
Well, aside from exploiting animals, the one thing that I remember most about him was he actually didn't just exploit animals. He exploited people and their stupidity.
People. Oh, sure, absolutely. He exploited
people
as much as...
One of the best stories that I ever read about him was he was having trouble emptying the big top after the main event. So he would invite people to go check out the Great Egress. This way to the Great Egress, ladies and gentlemen. The trouble was most people didn't know what the hell an egress was. It's an exit. But he made it sound like something wonderful, so everybody went to check it out, and then he could bring in more people to check out the next show. But he was able to empty the big top and reseat people. And that was where I think he was genius, because he exploited people's own stupidity. If you're dumb enough to be exploited, pardon my thought on this, but if you're dumb enough to be exploited on simple terms, you deserve it.
What about the fool me once, shame on you, fool me once, shame on me? I mean, I don't think you deserve it. People should have a trusting nature. Trust but verify, but I disagree. I think that you should try to take a person at their word. And if people violate that word, that is a statement against them, not you.
Well, the trouble was people would pay for one show, one hour-long sitting in the show, but then they wouldn't leave. It wasn't enforceable that they leave the big tent. So he had to do something to get them out of the big tent so he could bring in the next group of people and, sadly, exploit the animals for what they could do to entertain the people.
And for that particular instance, that may be it. But for overall, the exploitation of people or animals is never considered genius in my book, is all I'm saying.
I mean, he wasn't a great individual by any stretch of the imagination. But he was smart enough to know what made money. And he was smart enough to know. Now, did he treat the animals well? No, not particularly. A lot of times they were abused. And for that, he needs a good swift kick in the hoo-ha for it. But the simple fact that he understood that these were people of small means and small minds, and was able to entertain the next group of people with small means and small minds, for that, I've got to give him kudos. And if nothing else, it gave me inspiration to improve myself so I don't become what he pandered to. And the trouble is, as you pointed out, right now they're doing Shark Week and everything else, and they're doing the exact same thing.
But the difference is here is that what Shark Week is doing, what Discovery Channel is doing now by spreading misinformation is harming the sharks that they set out to protect. The original objective of Shark Week was conservation through education. It's become a circus now that glorifies shark attacks and actually spreads misinformation about these silly mystery sharks that are supposed to be huge and killing people and eating them whole. And that's actually doing harm to sharks. It is harming the image of sharks, and it harms sharks overall. It's detrimental to the shark population. It actually has a negative effect. It kills sharks because of apathy for them. So they're causing harm to them. It's a big difference.
Yeah, because everybody is now fearful of them, like Sharknado and...
Well, and when P.T. Barnum, when P.T. Barnum would speak to a group of people, he'd speak to a group of maybe 1,000 people. When Shark Week talks to people, they're talking to millions. You have to understand the repercussions of Discovery Channel when they pass out misinformation, especially when people that aren't intelligent enough to make the distinction between a mockumentary and a documentary.
Yeah, it definitely is something to where you watch Shark Week and someone like you or even a complete novice like someone like me who watches it, what kind of positive information is given?
It's very little. It's limited. And the negative information that's given always, you know, nullifies any positive information you may get. It's ridiculous what they've done to what was supposed to be something that spreads information and understanding. It's instead of doing the exact opposite. And, you know, the people that really truly love and appreciate sharks are the ones that are devastated the most.
Well, oh, there,
let me ask you this.
Hold on, Dennis. There was just a fact that popped up on screen on Shark Week.
Wait,
over the
people still facts?
Yeah, it was a fact that popped up on Shark Week. It said it's a fact that there was 179 shark attacks in the past 5 years. And they showed a guy wakeboarding in Florida.
And you know what I love is that big generalized statements about that as well. Again, that alone is misinformation because do you know what constitutes a shark attack?
Predatory?
You would think, did you know that because sharks have such abrasive skin, their skin is actually modified teeth. It's known as dermatenticles.
Yeah.
They have very rough skin. Did you know that the mere fact of a shark swimming past you and scraping your skin open is classified as a shark attack?
Yep.
Wow. Now, see, that I did not know.
That
and
is important to know.
I thought sharks were, like, smooth, like dolphins, but I've never been close enough to one. I've never even seen one in an aquarium, so I didn't even know that.
It's like 100 grit sandpaper.
In fact, some third world countries use shark skin as sandpaper. It's very rough and abrasive. And like I said, the mere act of a shark brushing up against somebody and say, giving them a nice red open welt in their leg, that's classified as a shark attack. It doesn't say this shark attack was only a major Indian burn. It's just classified as a shark attack. And as the statistics. And as the statistics that the media reports, it doesn't look into the meaning behind and spreads misinformation and causes harm to the species.
Oh, speaking of attacks and stuff like that, with the Sea of Cortez.
Yes.
With the weird kind of stuff that happens there as far as different depth travels, different attacks, different feeding patterns as far as natural habitat goes. What's the idea behind that? Like, what happens to the actual animal when it enters that channel of water?
I'll be honest, I don't know. I'm not familiar with any activity within the Sea of Cortez that is that much different from any other body of water. If there is, it's just not something I'm familiar with.
Because I've seen a lot of stuff to where their diet changes. They're feeding on different species that aren't normal prey items.
Generally that's usually indicative of nurseries and mating because, for instance, a juvenile great white isn't going to feed on a seal. A juvenile great white's going to feed on a large fish. So generally when you see animals feeding on prey that is not normally what they feed upon, it's only during their juvenile years, so around the area of a nursery or whatever during their growing phase.
Oh, abstract thought, but this is something Dennis and I were talking about before, and I had no idea. He has no idea. When you have something like that just happened with the supermoon, in your knowledge and your research, have you come across anything to where an event like that does have effect on marine life, on shark behavior, on
psychology?
I am not aware of any studies on it. I mean, the moon affects tides, and so tides affects marine land, so it obviously affects it in some way. But as far as the psychology of it, no, I'm not aware of. And to be honest with you, considering, again, the technology and it's how some things have only come around recently, I don't think there would be enough data to be able to stipulate anything from the supermoons. I mean, I'd have to wait for another generation or two of gathering some information.
And we're all going to be gone by then, so.
not me. Only the good die young. I plan on being around for a long time.
Yeah, well. I'm on my third life. I figure I got a couple more. Now, is there a, quote-unquote, psychology of the shark? All breeds, do they have any one thing in common that could be, you know, the psychology of the shark family?
Well, the thing is, there's over 400 species of shark. And I'm sure there's well more than that. I mean, that are even, you know, documented. And I'm sure there's many more that aren't. So we don't even know the psychological makeup of probably 90% of the shark populations. There's no way to answer it, because we may even know that there's a shark called this that lives here at a certain depth, but we certainly don't know enough about it to give it any kind of psychological profile. So there's, you know, again, we just know more about outer space than we do our own oceans, and that's true of its inhabitants as well. So when we just don't have any kind of reliable data. We have limited data of the dozen species that we do know about. So the other, 400 plus, we know absolutely nothing about their psychological makeup or behavior.
All right. Well, what is the deepest living environment known thus far for sharks? I mean, what is the deepest that we know we've encountered them in any form?
I don't want to give you misinformation. I'd have to look that up to be exact because, obviously, we've only done deep water studies in a few limited areas. So, I mean, we've seen, seven gills and deep water species in a few thousand feet of water, but I don't know the exact depth of the deepest one, but I know it's a few thousand feet.
Yeah, the seven-gill that's kind of like the, well, I can't say as elusive as the giant squid, because there's more.
No, no, it's not as elusive as the giant squid, because there is more. There's more footage, and you can actually see footage. They're not as you're absolutely correct in the statement. The giant squid, there's only one on film, I believe, ever.
Yeah.
And it's, I'll tell you what's funny is when you talk about things you'd be uncomfortable with in water. You know, I'm a again. I respect. There's nothing I fear in the ocean, and I respect everything. But a giant squid just might scare the shit out of me.
No. Yeah, if I saw something as large as the quote-unquote school bus coming at me that
that has, you know, a bunch of tentacles with hooks in it that could bring you into its beak and rip you apart, that might get a little few things going. Luckily, they hang out at a few thousand feet underwater.
And more towards Japan, so I think we're safe.
They're in a lot of areas other than Japan, and I'll tell you, with everything they've been doing around there, they're probably running away from Japan as we speak.
Now, the shark that we have discovered, that we are aware of, quote-unquote, at a few thousand feet, what breed of shark is that, and how large is that?
Again, that's going to be a few different species, so I wouldn't want to give you this information on that. There's probably a half dozen studies as of late that have done deep water cameras with motion detectors that have captured stills of different species of shark, and many of them are new to science. So they were named by the people that found them. They weren't even known before. So as much as I love sharks, I wouldn't even necessarily know what type they were because they were found on the spot.
So it's the Johnson shark or Jones shark or whatever.
Well, yeah, there actually is a fish, my favorite fish, name anyway. There's a fish called the Slippery Dick.
Yeah.
And that is a Caribbean fish, the Slippery Dick. And I said, well, a lot of people would be more interested in fish if we named fish that way.
And oh, most definitely. Now, what is the significance to it? I mean, why is it named?
I couldn't begin to tell you. I just, as a fish geek, I happen to know the name because every fish geek that trains a new fish geek makes sure to tell you what to predict.
That has to do with Richard Nixon. It was found in the 1960s.
Exactly. Very good, sir. You are correct. That slippery dick he got right out of office.
Now, what species of shark interest you the most, and which one do you have the most apathy for?
Oh, I fear I'm going to be very predictable in this. That's going to be the great white. I had the most interest and the greatest apathy for them because they are fascinating creatures, and they're only doing what they do. People try to vilify them for acting like sharks, which they've done before we were even graced upon this planet. And what really shocks me is that when Australia started their shark call, it broke my heart because I really thought the Australian people were better than, and for a time they were, and whoever they have, powers that be now, have been doing shark calls, and it's gotten out of hand, and I have a lot of friends in Australia that are just really upset about it. Great whites are just perfect creatures. They were made perfect the first time around. Evolution never touched them because they were perfect from day one. And they are not the mindless eating creatures that have been portrayed in movies or books. And to be honest with you, you're talking about a kid who was born in 1971. So I saw Jaws, of course, I was scared witless of sharks. It took me a long time before I came around. I was fascinated about them, but I was still scared of them. If you had told me at 6, 7 years old that I'd be diving with great whites, I was, you're nuts, because of the image that was portrayed.
In Peter Benchley's defense, he did tour the country the remainder of his life trying to, if you would, clear the name of Great White, so let them know it was only fiction. He never meant to vilify the creature, which I thought was pretty commendable.
So, speaking of Great Whites, how was it actually in the water with them, diving with them?
When my friends and I went on the trip, I was fortunate enough to join two old friends, and the remainder of the group of people that we met with were just top-notch. I met some fascinating people from all over the world. One of the greatest things about diving, in fact, I say the second greatest thing, of course, the first is the diving. The second to me, the people that you meet diving. When I meet other divers, no matter where they are, they're really kindred spirits. I mean, they're cut from the same cloth. They have a sense of adventure and just something about them that attracts me to them. I'm generally very fond of fellow divers even before I find out that they're divers. And this was no different. I was blessed to have a group of people that was just amazing out of this world, from all over the world. And as soon as we were in the waters that we knew Great Whites were around, we're all just looking at it. Can you imagine? We're just geeks about it. We're looking over the side as the boat's just, you know, piling out there and just we're in Great White waters. Can you imagine it? I mean, before we even got in the waters, we're like kids on Christmas Eve knowing we're getting a pony the next day. It was absolutely amazing. We get out there in the middle of the night, first thing in the morning, get up, eat breakfast, and we're diving with Great Whites, right? And we get in the water, and the very first dive, nothing. No sharks. And they warn you, and you have to be aware of this, is that, you know, they can't promise sharks will show up. I mean, it's very common, but they cannot guarantee you're going to see sharks. It's Mother Nature, and they just may not be there. And so the very first dive, we didn't see anything. And we were really definitely, like, oh, man, what's going to happen? So, second dive comes around. And a good 30, 40 minutes in, nothing. Then all of a sudden, you spot just like a flash in the water, some movement. No, really? Is that it? And then sure enough, this silhouette just, you can see it's large. And you know it's coming towards you. And it starts clearing up. And you're literally hugging the person next to you, shaking up and down, screaming in your regulator, knowing you have a great white shark coming towards you. It was just kind of weird, where most people are going to, you know, do these. We were just absolutely thrilled. The rush, the thrill, knowing that we weren't getting scum, that we just got a shark there alone, was amazing. And this guy came around and was very inquisitive, and we were fortunate enough to be able to watch him for the next 30, 40 minutes. And because it's a very shallow dive, and just see that alone, right there, seeing my first great white in the water with it was literally a spiritual experience. It makes you feel the connection. It's amazing the things that go on under the ocean and how they act. And seeing a 15-foot fish that hasn't changed in eons is breathtaking, and I was absolutely blown away. I'm sure I was probably crying in my mask, and you could quote me on that. I don't care. It was quite a moving experience.
Hey, were you in a cage or free diving?
Hey, hold on, Dennis. Ben, hold on 1 second. We got about just less than a minute left. If you have anything that you're doing currently, you want to throw out plugs for. If you talk fast, we can get it in under our actual time, and we can continue the conversation in the archive.
Well, it's very kind of you. Really quick, I own a company named Go Fish Aquariums. Go Fish is in the card game, aquariums with an S, .com. I'm in the field, and I love bringing the ocean home to people if that's what they're into. So besides that, I would love to talk to you guys more.
Awesome. All right. That
we'll catch this in the archive. And ladies and gentlemen, thanks for joining us for another week of Full Spectrum Radio. It's been a fantastic show. Catch myself. I am CPR Dennis.
CPR Matt.
And you can find us at both Facebook and Twitter. Thanks for joining us. We're now rolling into archive. Now, to my question, Vince, you were in the water with a great white first time ever. Were you going to Cage?
Reluctantly, yes. And I'll tell you why, because one of the big things that I did when I started researching this was look for a place that lets you swim outside of the cage. Because as you guys were talking, we got the Ampullae of Lorenzini as a sensory organ. They can detect the electromagnetic field from the cage, and it makes them act differently. I'd rather be away from anything like that and observe the shark naturally. The firm that I actually signed up with advertised themselves as a company that would let you dive on top of the cage, which is the only other option you may have. And so I was excited to go with these people. When I get there, literally the dive master says on the briefing of the morning of diving, "I know a lot of you paid a lot of money to come dive with great white sharks outside of the cage, but that's not going to happen." "Well, thank you." Apparently he has said some new law had just come into effect, which I think was a bunch of BS. It turned out it was, because people have done it since then. I had some very limited time on top of the cage, out of the cage, and maybe observe them, but it was much more limited than I would have liked. I have no problem observing sharks, great whites, outside of a cage. And again, if the thing is with great whites, especially if they see that you see them, that's half the battle. They are self-predators. They're not looking to start a fight. They're not looking to try to have any kind of repercussions. They'd much rather sneak up on your ass and bite you in half. That's what they're all about. That's how they get seals. In fact, one of the greatest things I saw out there was that really, I mean, somebody who is a shark enthusiast as much as I am, the thing that really caught me off guard, which I guess shouldn't have, but the seals taunt the great whites. They taunt them relentlessly because there is no way the shark is going to catch that seal if the seal knows it's there. They're just too damn fast and limber. And so these seals, when they see a great white, they'll bite it in the nose, and then they'll run to its tail and bite it in the tail, and then go to the nose, bite its nose, and bite it in the tail, and pick on it and bully it. The sharks don't even react. Because they know they can't possibly catch these damn things. They've given up. They're like, "I'm not even going to mess with it. It's too fast, and why waste my energy?" So these seals will beat on these great whites. Great whites are like, absolutely, every day. And the great whites are like, "Yes, you just wait, go to sleep. I'm going to eat your ass." Yeah, I mean, but I'm telling you, they bully, the seals bully the great whites. They absolutely do.
And this is the number one food on a great white's menu is a seal.
Yes.
And they bully the shark.
They bully them. They pick on them, absolutely. Because if they know that they're in the water, they're not catching them. They know that. Sharks rely on stealth attack. They rely upon that. And if they don't have that, it's a whole new ballgame. So when those seals know that the shark's in the water, they mess with it like you wouldn't believe. That's the greatest thing that caught me off guard. I didn't anticipate that at all, and I had to laugh. Because here's a 15-foot great white getting harassed by a seal.
Oh, yeah. They almost go into a, I don't know what to do. But is this worth the energy? It's like a 747 chasing an F-16.
Yeah, it really is funny. And the first thing that all the divers talked about together was that. Can you believe that? I mean, we all, you know, like to fancy ourselves as shark enthusiasts. So it was kind of funny that really none of us were expecting that. And sure enough, they just are relentless. And what's neat is the island of Guadalupe, because where I went was Guadalupe Island off the coast of Baja, Mexico. It's an island that has maybe 100 people living on it without power, plumbing, nothing. They're just very simple fishermen. But when the dive boats come out there, because they don't have permits to go close to the shore, again, we can only stay like maybe 200 yards away from shore. We can't go any closer. But a lot of people like to go check out the seals on the shore and see the island. And so the locals that actually live there, like I said, without power or plumbing, will hop on one of these little, you know, a 15-foot bass boat, come out to the boat and say, hey, you know, we'll ride you around. And so they grabbed a bunch of us from off the boat, and we all got in this, you know, the 15-foot bass boat, and we're like, you know, we saw sharks bigger than this. We were in the water yesterday. It's kind of funny. They're cruising around this little steel bass boat, just taking tours of the seals along the island, and it was absolutely amazing. And we all gave them, you know, everybody gave them like $20, which is probably a year's pay for them. So it was amazing that they got to show us a little part of it, and we got to give back. It was a fun experience. I enjoyed it thoroughly.
So speaking of small boats, and this popped in my head of Jaws, of I think we're going to need a bigger boat. Speaking of Jaws, what I know back in the 70s and early 80s, there was a huge, huge repercussion because of that movie. It was actually really sad of what happened with sharks and stuff, but as far as the accuracy of the film and the research that was done behind it, take the theatrical, like, blowing it up with a, you know, the scuba tank and that out of it, but, and also, in my experience, the predatory just barrage of attacks that the shark did on the boat. But the rest of the information, would you put any accuracy to that at all, or no?
What information specifically are you talking about?
Just the terrorizing a beach, and, you know, like if you do have one rogue shark that goes out and deviates from its normal diet.
No. Total fiction. It's never happened. It's absolutely total fiction.
Well, I mean, I can see, and forgive me for this, I can see where it's possible, because we have had humans that, you know, terrorize one beach, quote-unquote beach. You know, they go in and they shoot up a school. They, you know, I mean, from time to time, humans flip shit and just do stupid things that don't fit the script. Is it potential? Now, is it a psychological issue? Is it a deficiency of something? You know, I kind of see where Matt's coming from. Is it potential for sharks to have, like humans do, where the brain starts to fail and dementia comes in, psychosis, and everything else? Have we studied sharks?
That's the great thing about shark minds, is they're simple. You know, the problem when you get into things is when you get starting complex. For instance, you know, your Chevy may not be all that fancy, but you're not going to need as many repairs as that fancy Mercedes with all the computer chips, okay? A shark's mind is very simple. There's no such thing as dementia in the shark world. It doesn't happen. There's no such thing as cancer in the shark world. There's no such thing as disease. Sharks are very simple, but they perfected what they have. That's why evolution hasn't needed to touch them. So, no, I'm sorry. It's absolutely incredible. There's nothing about sharks that would lead to that.
Well, they actually use shark tissue for cancer research just because not possible. It's not possible in their DNA. But the other thing about
sharks don't get cancer.
The other thing about Jaws, too, is that was spawned off, and correct me if I'm wrong, it was the 1920s or 1930s when it happened.
The New Jersey had a number of attacks in the 1920s that spawned some of the original stories, correct.
And that was a bull shark. That wasn't even a great white.
I have a hard time blaming any particular species because back then especially they didn't have a lot of let's put it this way. We know so little about sharks now. How little did they know at the turn of the century? So,
oh yeah,
I'm not even comfortable saying they got the species right. So whatever the case may be, it's still isolated because there's been decades and decades since then showing that they average 5 deaths a year. So what is that?
No, I know that, but it, like the original story, I'm just talking, you know, brass tacks of how the story was created, was from bull shark attacks in a river in New York. It didn't have anything to do with the open ocean at that point.
I don't want to speak out of turn to be incorrect because I thought there was some beach incidents that were included in that, but I could be wrong. But
yeah.
I know exactly what you're talking about, and I think that you are correct in most of your assertions. It's just that I can't be 100% sure, so I don't want to confirm either way. But the main thing to remember is that there's going to be, when you're going into the wild, things can occur. I mean, this is not like it's not Disneyland. You're going into the open ocean. Going into the open ocean is no different than going into, you know, the great wilderness with grizzly bears. You have to understand and take the risk and accept them. You're going into, if you don't want to be bothered by sharks, don't go in the ocean. It won't happen.
Yeah, and
I can hear.
Yeah, you're never going to get attacked on land.
Correct.
Well,
so, I mean,
by a shark,
if you're afraid, right, exactly. Those Homo sapiens will get you though. But if you're concerned about sharks, let them be.
Well, Vince, it has truly been phenomenal talking to you, and I'm kind of scared that Blog Talk's going to do what it did to us on Monday night and just hang us up. I know at 11:15 it just shut us down right then, and we were still talking with the guest. So
he's Eastern time, by the way. So that would be
who is
four minutes. That would be 4 minutes from 4 minutes from now is when they got shut down yesterday.
Monday, and that's what I'm afraid of. I'd love to continue this. And we will definitely have you back on, Vince, because some of the stories that you have are cool as shit. but do me a favor, throw your plugs out one more time.
Well, for one more time, I own a company by the name of Go Fish Aquariums. Geo Fish is in the card game, aquariums with an S.com.
All right. And ladies and gentlemen, I want to thank you for joining Full Spectrum Radio. This has been our Shark Week special, and I don't think we could have had a better guest. It definitely
was my pleasure.
We're talking about. So,
my pleasure. Thank you, Bill, for having me. I really appreciate it. It's a lot of fun.
Dan, since you're around me, I have to say or later this week, I got a bunch of boat stuff I got to finish throughout the week. But I got to buy it and, you know, hook up with you. We'll have dinner, you know, grab a drink, grab a soda, something like that. I don't know what your gig is, but love to talk to you.
We're grabbing a beer, not a soda, but thanks. All
right, that'll work. So we'll grab a beer, love to shake your hand, hang out with you a little bit, and shoot
and,
the shit,
and
man.
Being in Chicago, we grab a pop, not a soda. I don't know where you're from, but it was fun talking to you guys. Thank you so much.
I'm from Houston, man, so down south.
There you go, see?
That's a soda.
That's okay.
But,
Let him blame
anything you want to. It's all good. But
it was a pleasure talking to you guys. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, stay with you, and hope to be back down soon.
Thanks for taking the time, brother.
Anytime. Take care, gentlemen.
Thank you, sir. Ladies and gentlemen, thanks for joining us. And prior to Full Spectrum Radio getting chucked off the air again by Blog Talk, catch me. I'm CPR Dennis.
I'm CPR Matt.
You can find us at both Facebook and Twitter under those names. And it's been an absolute pleasure.
And soon, I didn't tell you this, but I'm going to say it right now, you'll be able to find us at .com very shortly.
Awesome. I'm going to throw us back a few years.
Go for it.
Imagine that we all have a wall.